My guest at this time is Melanie Kirkpatrick. She is a journalist, writer, and a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute here in Washington. She's also the author of the brand new book, Escape from North Korea, The Untold Story of Asia's Underground Railroad. And it's just an amazing book to think about the conditions that people live in North Korea and the lengths to which some people will go to leave and the lengths that others will go to help them leave, and obviously the dangers that exist when they do try to leave. And Melanie, thank you so much for being with us.
It's great to be with you.
Real quickly, before we get to the incredible narrative of this story that you've written here, how did you get so connected with the plight of the people in North Korea?
I worked for the Wall Street Journal for 29 years, and I covered a jillion different stories during my years there, of course. But this was a story that really captured my heart, the very inspiring stories of people who fled North Korea looking for freedom, and the equally inspiring stories of the Americans, the South Koreans, and the Chinese who helped them.
When you look at annual lists of most closed or repressive societies, North Korea is right at the top. It's also at the top of the list of nations most hostile to Christianity, for example. So there's a lot of reasons that people who live there wouldn't want to be there. But given the penalties for any sort of dissent to the government, how do they go about doing that?
It's very much like the slaves in the American South in the early part of the 19th century. If they want to get out of North Korea, a person basically has to do it on his own. He maybe will pay some border guards to look the other way when he crosses the border into China, but a lot of them just make a break for it. But once they get to China, that's when they have to have help, because China's policy is to track down North Koreans, arrest them, and send them back to North Korea. And once they're sent back by China, the North Koreans imprison them for the so-called crime of having left their country. It's considered a political crime to leave North Korea without permission, and in some cases it's considered treason. So once they reach safety or relative safety in China, then that's when the Underground Railroad kicks in and they need help to help them make their way across China and eventually to South Korea.
And even those who do get away, and we'll talk about how they get away in just a moment, there are severe repercussions for those they have to leave behind, correct?
Yes, there can be. I interviewed many, many North Koreans who had escaped for my book. And in most cases, unless they already had been outed for some reason, in most cases they did not want me to use their names or photographs, because everybody fears what will happen to the families that they've left behind. Let me give you just one example. The number one North Korean, the highest ranking North Korean to defect, was a man now deceased by the name of Hwang Jung-yap. And he was a high-ranking official who defected. North Korea tracked down and imprisoned or killed 3,000 of his family members and former associates. So, you know, everybody in North Korea understands that if you commit a political crime like leaving the country, you're exposing your relatives to risk.
Is there any indication that the new leader there, Kim Jong-un, is any more reasonable than his ancestors?
I haven't seen any, Greg. It's one of the reports from the border, the Sino-Chinese border, are that one of the first acts that he made as new dictator after his father's death last December, one of his first acts was to issue a shoot-to-kill order. That is, North Korean border guards were to shoot anybody they saw trying to cross the border into China. No questions asked, just kill them.
All right, let's talk about this Underground Railroad now. Whether you're paying off a border guard, you happen to sneak across the border at a different spot, and you're in China, you mentioned the danger of being caught by Chinese officials. You'll get sent back and punished severely. So where does the railroad kick in? How does it work?
Well, the first thing a North Korean learns when he gets to China is find a Christian. Many of the people I interviewed told me that the advice they were given was look for a building with the cross on it, that is, a church. If a North Korean is lucky enough to hook up with a local Chinese Christian, that person is likely to help him, because Christians are really the only people in China who are willing to help the North Koreans. It's a crime to help a North Korean refugee, so anybody who does so is risking fines or imprisonment. But if he find if the North Korean hooks up with a Christian or finds a church, then he's more likely to be directed to the network of people who can help him. And here there are really two unlikely groups. One is brokers, that is human traffickers who are in it for the money and will help people who have funds get out of China. And the other group are Christians, and many of these are Americans or South Koreans who have gone to China to help North Koreans. They provide safe houses for them. They help them make their way across the country, usually to Southeast Asia. And once they're in Southeast Asia, they can go to a South Korean consular facility and ask for asylum in South Korea.
We're talking with Melanie Kirkpatrick. The book is Escape from North Korea, The Untold Story of Asia's Underground Railroad. And Melanie, you also talk about in the book of how sometimes North Korean women end up essentially being brides, forced brides for Chinese men because of the one-child policy. There's so few women that they basically take the women from North Korea. Is this after they get into China? Or are they basically taken from North Korea and then brought across the border? How does that work?
It's a little bit of both. As Steve Kim, an American businessman from the New York City area, is an expert on North Korean brides, and I interviewed him and told his story at length in Escape from North Korea. What happens is that a Chinese man can place an order for a bride, and a broker might go into North Korea, find the woman who meets the man's specifications. It's really like the slave trade, and then trick her into coming to China. He'll tell her he has a job for her, or that he'll take her to visit a relative, or something like that. Some ruse to get her to go to China. Other times, the women, have fled to China on their own, and they meet up with a broker there, who again will trick them into, or take them to the man's house and just say, "Hey, here's your new husband," and then walk away, leaving her there with the man who's supposedly her husband. And other times, and this is very, very sad, the woman is so desperate that she will agree to a quote-unquote marriage with a Chinese man. Sometimes these marriages work out, and sometimes the women are, happy to be there. Or satisfied. They don't want to risk leaving China on the Underground Railroad. But other times, many other times, there are terrible situations. The women may have children in both countries, North Korea and China. And one of the things that I discovered in my research for the book is that once these women reach safety in South Korea, one of the first things they do is start saving their money to try to get their children out of China or North Korea. It's very, very sad. But of course, their first concern is about their kids.
Melanie, just a couple minutes left in our conversation here. I also see in the notes for this book that some of the people looking to cross the border are still prisoners of war from the Korean War 60 years ago.
Yeah, this was an amazing story. The South Korean South Korean government estimates that there are around 500 South Koreans who are still being held captive in North Korea from the Korean War. And these men, of course, are now very elderly. And I uncovered in my research for the book, I uncovered a secret network that since the late 90s has been helping get these old soldiers out of North Korea to China and then on to safety back home in South Korea, where they are, of course, treated as returning heroes. There are about 100 of them so far who have made their way back to South Korea.
Last question. You mentioned the role that churches, especially right across the border in China, play and in helping to bring these people to safety after they've escaped from North Korea. We also established before that North Korea is a strong persecutor of Christianity, in fact, probably the strongest in the world. Do they hate Christians because of their atheistic nature? Do they hate them because of what they're doing to help people escape the country?
all religion is banned in North Korea. That is, the only worship that's allowed is the worship of the Kim family regime. So Christianity, like other religions, is a threat because it requires the individual to answer to a higher authority, to another authority other than the Kim family. One of the things I discovered in my research, and I write about in Escape from North Korea, is that Christianity appears to be growing in North Korea. There are some catacomb Christians left, that is, people who are still practicing Christianity secretly and have been doing so for more than 50 years. But then also there are new Christians, small churches that are being established in North Korea by North Koreans who've escaped, become Christians in China or South Korea, and then have taken the amazingly dangerous step of going back to North Korea to plant churches there.
Amazing. Amazing stories all the way around. Again, the title is Escape from North Korea, The Untold Story of Asia's Underground Railroad. Melanie, thank you very much for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Same here. Melanie Kirkpatrick, journalist, writer, senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, former deputy editor of the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal, and again, the title of her book, Escape from North Korea. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.